We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Stort for the win. It's good. Krzyzewski takes flight as SGA plays through the contact, banks it in on the foul.
What is up, and welcome to the Uncontested Post-Game Podcast. I know I'm your host, Nick, even though I took Jacob's line, but I am joined by Jacob tonight. Jacob, how you doing?
What's up? I'm good, man.
So the last two times the Chicago Bulls were in Oklahoma City, December 16th, 2019, the Thunder trailed by 22 points and pulled off a win.
Do you remember tonight, who led that comeback in 2019, Nick?
Probably Shea.
Who cooked in that fourth quarter?
It had to have been Shea.
Chris Paul. I don't know if you remember, Chris Paul hunted the switch onto Wendell Carter Jr. every time down and just cooked.
Well, that was the January 15th, 2021 game. Maybe was that actually 2019?
That was 2019 because Chris was the 2019-2020 season.
God, time is like a weird thing right now, man.
I know,
2019
man.
Feels like so long ago.
I know.
You're right, though. You're right. But then there was the other game, January 15th, 2021. Thunder trailed by 22. Ended up coming back and winning that game. The first time with Chris Paul was 26. Tonight was 28.
Yes.
But
and the game last year, 2021, almost a year ago to the day, it was January 15th.
Ooh, yeah. You're spot on.
And they got down, and Shea cooked in that game and brought them back.
There's a reason you bring home prizes at trivia night at all the different restaurants and bars in Oklahoma City. You know your stuff.
My brain is wired strangely.
Well, tonight they did not pull off the win. I think you and I both agree, probably for the best. It was a fun game, huge comeback, 27-point swing. Really, it was more of a 23-point swing, 24-point swing. Muscala hits that three at the very end when it didn't really matter. But lose by one, final score of 111 to 110. Jacob, I want to start with the play of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who honestly I don't think has a chance at making the All-Star team this year. As good as he's played, and we've talked about this for a couple of years now, as good as he is, until the Thunder start winning games, it's just not in his cards. What have you seen from him recently? Because he went through kind of a slump there. He was getting a little bit of criticism for the amount of step back threes. His splits are nowhere near as good as they were last year. What have you seen from him more recently in which he's emerged? And we've seen people on Twitter, national media, saying he's been one of the best guards in the entire league over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Shout out Josh Eberle on Twitter, who given Shea some love tonight. Tonight, Nick, Shea goes for, let me get it pulled up here. 31 points on 53% from the field and 40% from three, took 14 free throws, had three rebounds, 10 assists, three steals. If you look at his recent game logs, tonight, 31 points against Cleveland, 29, against Charlotte, 29. San Antonio is the outlier at 13, Dallas, 34, Cleveland, 21, Brooklyn, 33, Washington, 32. And the most threes he took in any of those games was against Cleveland 2 nights ago.
Yep.
When he took 7 threes. He's not shooting the three. He is attacking the basket relentlessly. Talked about it last night on the weekly show. When you look at the past 5 games, he is averaging 28 drives per game. That is the most in the league over that span by about 5 drives a game. The dude is living, just getting downhill, creating contact, neither making layups or getting to the free throw line, not settling at all. And Nick, tonight, the thing that was most impressive to me was I felt like he really played within the flow of the offense. I felt like he didn't force a lot. And then whenever he had it going, he kind of, he didn't slam on the gas and just do crazy shit. He just slowly eased on the pedal and put more and more and more pressure. But I mean, I think the best example of him playing within the offense tonight, under a minute to go, Thunder are trying to complete the comeback, drives to the basket, had the step back little free throw range jumper that he loves.
Yep.
Instead, found a cutting Giddy. Great cut by Giddy, by the way. Feeds him for the layup at the rim. Not forcing things, playing within the offense, but being incredibly efficient at it.
That would have been a tough shot, too. As much as he loves that type of shot, that's a very, very tough shot. He would have had to have put a ton of arc on it, get it over the defender, but instead finds Giddy. I didn't even... Giddy kind of came out of nowhere. I don't know if it was the camera angle or just the angle he came from. I didn't even see him cutting until the last second. Shea finds him, easy layup, pulls the game. I think, was it within one at that point? Was that when they pulled within one, or was it within three?
I think that pulled them within one, and then right after that is when they fouled, and LaVine hit 2 free throws.
No, but I think you're right. For Shea, it's about, is the game coming to him, or is he forcing it? Now, there has been games where he's forced the issue and he's been successful. He's just said, I'm the best player on the floor. I'm going to go score, and he scores the ball. But we've seen the flip side of that where he does a little bit too much, and that's where his efficiency really, really drops off. Mm-hmm. And those are nights that either Dort or Giddy have to pick up the slack and score a bunch of points, or they're going to lose by a lot. Tonight was a night that kind of surprisingly didn't end up being as a high of scoring game as I thought. The Bulls scored 111 points, which, don't get me wrong, that's not a recipe for success, is giving up 110 plus points. But the Thunder defense of late has been horrific. You know, you tweeted during the game, the last couple of weeks have been pretty bad. I almost think it stretches over the course of the last month or more. You know, they were one of the top 15 defensive teams in the league. I know it's never an accomplishment to be in the top half of the league when you want to be really, really good. You want to be top 5, top 10 at whatever you do. But being in the top half of the league defensively is an accomplishment for a team that's been as bad as Oklahoma City. I tweeted you during the game and said that's been a crutch for them early in the season when they were winning games. It was their solid defense. And of late, it's been very, very, very bad. Do you think that's more of a, you know, the season's kind of at the midway point, players are no longer have that early season, you know, happiness and giddiness for playing the game, and they're just kind of getting lazy, or what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, that's a great question. Before I answer that real quick, the Bulls had 82 points with 7 minutes left to go in the third quarter. 82 points. They ended the game with 111. So that means they scored 29 points in 20 game minutes.
Yeah.
Some of that was just they got really cold. Some of that was Ayo Dosunmu couldn't just be prime Jordan for forever.
Dude.
But I think it's a combination of things, Nick. Like, we know the Thunder's goal is to tank and to get a high draft pick.
Yep.
The players know that is, I mean, they're not being told, hey, go out there and play like shit and lose games, but they know that their team is set up to not win a lot of games. We're in middle, late January when, I mean, Josh Giddey has talked about it recently. He's been texting his Australian NBA friends trying to figure out, how the hell do I get through 82 games?
Right. NBL is a different ball game, literally.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you look at things like tonight. Jeremiah Robinson Earl, I like the dude a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been on record on this podcast saying he can be your bench big for a decade.
Supporter. Yeah.
He has literally no chance in hell at defending Nikola Vucevic, or as my guy Perk would like to say, Babusevic. I mean, if the Bulls wanted to feed Vooch tonight, he could have had 45.
Easy.
You know, I mean,
easy.
JRE was sinking down so low because he couldn't stop Vooch at the rim. And then so they just went to the pick and pop. And then whenever he'd close out on the pick and pop, Vooch would just body the shit out of him down low and get buckets. So a lot of it, I think, is just personnel based as well.
And that's not his fault either. He's 6'8", 6'9", being asked to play center.
Yeah. He's fighting, but I mean, this is the big leagues, man. Yeah. You know, when you're giving up 3-4 inches and 25 pounds, that dude is going to put you in the basket every time.
And you saw who was guarding him down the stretch. Kenrich Williams.
And then they intentionally put Dort on LaVine so they could switch that pick and roll every time. So it was giving me shades of Derek Fisher guarding Tim Duncan in the Western Conference Finals again.
Jeez. I mean, even like the Melo year, the literal offensive game plan for every team that played OKC was get Melo to switch on your ball handler and cook him.
Mm-hmm. And that's all the Jazz did in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's different now because it's more down low, or it's less perimeter oriented. But teams know the Thunder are under. It's not a secret. Their tallest player is Alexei Pokushevsky.
Yeah,
he's currently playing with the Blue. First of all, he's not your 7-footer that's going to go defend the rim.
Exactly.
But even when he's on the floor, he's guarding guards and wings. So when he's not on the team, there is not a 7-footer on this roster.
Hell, their tallest player in the starting lineup tonight was their point guard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even their point guard had an inch on their center.
You even look at the bench, the tallest player is Mike Muscala, who's maybe 6'10 and known for being a floor spacing big. He's not a traditional big.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Favors is your traditional center, and he's 6'9". He played power forward his whole career until he got too slow.
Yeah.
Now he's playing center. Like that's the epitome of this Thunder roster. And we've talked about it a lot. This team has to find the center of the future, whether that's through draft or through trade, free agency, whatever it might be. It's not a priority now because there's no need to win a bunch of games now, but I do want to talk about a trade. And I put the poll on the Uncontested Twitter tonight and got some interesting responses. I'd like to hear your take on this.
Okay. I like this kind of theme that we've been doing trade ideas after each post game. I did the Charlotte game and I did the PJ Washington trade. Now you're doing the Bulls. You've got a trade. I like this.
Well, so, and this player did not play tonight, so it's a little bit different, but along the same lines, you're right. I don't know what the trade would look like. This is one of those trades where God knows what the asking price is because he's not playing this year. It's Pat Williams. If the Bulls wanted to go all in, I think Lu Dort makes more sense than ever. With Caruso being out for the next month or two, they need a guy that can defend. I think Dort is by far a better scorer than Caruso. If they're going to go legitimately be contenders, and they were the number one seed in the East last week. Like that's not a crazy statement to make. If they're going to go be a contender in the East and they want to make a win now move, Pat Williams is the guy that you trade. In a vacuum, if Dort for Williams, if that was something the Bulls were willing to accept, is that a no-brainer for you? Is that a no-go for you somewhere in between? Where are you at on that trade?
That's an absolute no-brainer.
I agree.
I love Lu Dort. Here's the thing, though. I don't think, with all the injuries, I think that probably changes what the Bulls do at the deadline.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I think the Thunder are the team that have to put in a pick there. I think it has to be Lu Dort and Darius Bazley in a pick for Patrick Williams.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like 150% in on that. I mean, that accomplishes two goals. It makes you worse this season and betters your pick.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets you a really, really good power forward that is young and you can build around. And then even if you get like the number one, number two pick in the draft, you can still go get Jabari. You can still go get Paulo. You can go get Chet, whatever, and you can still make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. And so The interesting thing is there's still a bunch of time left on this poll. We got 144 votes right now. Guess the percent split.
I bet it's really close to 50-50.
It is on the dot 50-50.
Oh, wow. I'm one of the yes votes, by the way.
I am too. I'm a no-brainer yes.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to me. I have no idea what it would take for the Bulls. I think if they were to trade a guy like him, it'd be more for a Jeremy Grant type player. Obviously, Dort's younger, probably has, I don't know about more potential, but just more upside just because he is younger than Jeremy Grant. But if they're really looking to win now, there's definitely guys out there that could do that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the three-point shooting. The Thunder tonight shot 35.6% from three, 16 of 45, which doesn't sound great, but entering the day, they were 31% from deep as a team, worst in the NBA, worst in the NBA since the 2012-13 season.
Jesus.
So they are historically bad from three. A lot of that is their three highest volume three-point shooters, Shea, Dort, and Giddey, are just not good three-point shooters this season. Like, I tweeted you today, yesterday, the day before, you'd mentioned Dort is going to shatter the number of three-point makes he's going to have this season, but he's taking a bunch, right? Like, if you take a lot, you're going to make a lot. I'm just curious your thoughts. This is more holistically than tonight's game against the Bulls. Do you see... Like, I know that trio of players, Dort, Giddey, Shea, has been, even Mark's been asked pregame, like, what do you think about the fit of those three? Can you run those three together long term? Knowing that none of them have excelled as three-point shooters this season, do you see that as a detractor for them being a long-term kind of backcourt trio, or what are your thoughts there longer term?
That's a really big question.
It's tough.
Let me put it this way. Gun to my head, have to choose. You say three players on this roster will be on the Thunder at the start of the 2023-2024 season.
Okay.
I'm so going
that's 2 years from now.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm going Shea. I'm going Josh. I'm going Trey.
Ooh, not JRE? Your center for the next decade?
Yeah, those are the three I'd go. Those are the three that I think have the highest upside.
Okay.
Like, reachable upside. I think Poku's upside is insane.
Yeah.
I think it's falling off a cliff, his chance to reach that upside, right? Yeah. I think those three guys. It's very, very clear to me that what this team needs is a guy who can shoot the piss out of the ball,
yep,
and kind of provide a lot of floor spacing. And like we talked about, your center of the future, that really sticks out to me watching them play the Cavs.
Yeah.
Two times in the past week.
Three 7-footers in their starting lineup.
Yeah. Darius Garland's incredible. Garland gets 4 assists a game just by throwing the basketball somewhere towards the rim.
Yep.
The Thunder needs someone. They don't need an all-star type center. Right.
Yeah.
But a Miles Turner type center, a Clint Capella type center, guy that can anchor your defense and just catch lobs and be a pick and roll threat, I think would do so much for Shea and for Giddey. So for that reason, I don't know if Lou is like the long-term fit. It's hard to dig through all of the rumors, but we believe that the Thunder were offering Lou and picks last summer to move up in the draft.
Three.
That wouldn't surprise me. Lou is great. Lou is awesome. You've been on this for a long time. Do they want to pay Lou? That's going to be a big point of contention moving forward.
Yep.
I think they can, because even if you pay him $16, $17, $18 million a year, that's very tradable, especially with the new CBA coming up. Yep. If you're able to get a guy like a Jabari Smith Jr., maybe like a Shadon Sharp or a Jaden Ivey, someone who can fill that Lou Dort role and have a higher ceiling, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Lou Dort get traded on draft night this year.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know. if those three are like, you know, Sam Price is like, we have to build around these three. I think he loves Lu Dort. I think they love everything that Lu Dort represents.
Yep.
An undrafted guy who told other teams he didn't want to be a draft and stash second rounder because he wanted to go to Oklahoma City, fights his way up through the G League, is very much a buy your bootstraps kind of player. I think the Thunder are incredibly proud of what Lu Dort is and what Lu Dort encompasses.
Yep.
But you got to take the biggest home run swings you can. And Lu Dort is a piece to the puzzle.
Yep. And if you were to move forward with that trio, you would almost have to have a power forward and center that are like 40-45% 3-point shooters. Mm-hmm. Like you'd have to
have spacers. Yeah.
Or a bench that's just full of like future Kyle Korvers, you know? And then also I'm not against paying Lu Dort. Like I've been critical of him and his upcoming payday. I just think you pay him knowing he's going to be a bench player, right? Like you don't pay him like he's going to be your starting shooting guard for the next decade. You pay him like he's going to be your sixth man. That's what he's going to be. Like if he's going to be on this team 5 years from now when they're in the playoffs, if he's a starter, something went really wonky in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Or so, he just blew the top off.
Yeah, well, sure.
And the his ceiling ended up being much higher, and he attained it.
Yeah. So I don't know, Lou. Great play, and like you said, he is Thunder culture and a player. Like trust the process is the Sixers mantra. I know, but like that is what he is for the Thunder. Like he went through the ringer. He G League to. I mean, it was 3 years ago. We were talking about this G League guy just guarded Dame Lillard. Now he's guarding.
I was
Donovan
there for
Mitchell.
his first G League game, covering that game.
Yeah, not too long ago. Like and now he's just balling out.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to talk about another guy that has been impressive. I'm curious your take on his ceiling. He's versatile. I don't know what position he's going to play long term, but Aaron Wiggins, he's been a guy that has proven to be a bucket getter. Also a quality defender. That's something that Mark's talked about quite a bit, is that he has defensive upside. I guess to water down the question so I don't open up just like a random can of worms that you could take from any angle, is Aaron Wiggins a guy that's scoring on a team because someone has to score, or is he actually showing you something?
He's definitely showing me something. I've been pretty firm on this. He's been good. Like, he can hit the open shot when it gets passed to him. He's shooting 31% from three in 28 games. He started 15 games this season. He is shooting 49% from the field, three rebounds, an assist, a steal a game, 7.5 points. To me, he is like a Kenrich Williams mini-me. Yeah. I see a lot of Kenrich's type of game in him. Just kind of does a little bit of everything. I love the fact that he can get to the hoop, that he's athletic enough to get up and dunk. He cuts a lot, which I think is huge when you have a guy like Josh Giddey on your team. I've been big on this, and I'm going to stay on this.
Okay.
I want to see what he does next year.
Yeah.
Because we were talking a lot about Théo Maledon 12 months ago.
It's weird, look
at
where
that dude's at.
Yeah.
That dude's probably not on this roster after this summer.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not good. You know, we need a lot more runway with Wiggins. He just turned 23 at the beginning of January. A little bit of an older dude. He's only a year younger than Shea. He's like a decade older than Poku. So he's got a little more experience, a little more maturity to him. He's a little more physically developed. So I think that plays a role as well. I don't think he's on anybody's scouting report, but I just think he does a lot of the little things. He can defend. He can cut. He can shoot a little bit. He makes the right play. I see a lot of Kenrich in him. And if you have guys like that, I mean, how tall is Wiggins? Like 6'5", 6'6"?
Yeah.
6'6", 200 pounds. I mean, he is I think his ceiling is like a solid bench wing that can give you 15 minutes a night.
Yeah. And at pick 55, making next to nothing on your payroll, that's, that's okay. I want to close out by talking about Kenrich Williams. You mentioned him. Over the next, what do we got, 16, 17 days between now and the trade deadline, he's probably going to be the name that you hear the most. We've already got, not that these are like Shams or Woj type articles that are actually putting out news and intel around the league, but Bleacher Report put out this morning their three players every team should target kind of a thing, and there was different tiers based on realistic and like best case and then like kind of a low baller, and Kenrich Williams' name pops up all around the league, and I think you and I both agree he would fit on every single team in this league, whether you're rebuilding like the Thunder and know he could be a team or a guy that could help you in the future, or you're a contending team and he can raise your ceiling now, does it all on both ends, hustles, hence the nickname. I guess my question to you would be, are you pro, and the question is relative, like if a team calls and offers three first round picks, even if you're the biggest Kenrich Williams fan in the world, you're going to say trade him. But yeah. But relative to what he's probably worth, are you team trade him, get the assets now, and completely tank the bottom out of your team over the next, you know, 40 games the rest of the way? Or are you team keep him around, maybe try to re-sign him, keep him long term for whenever you're good again, or is a guy like Wiggins maybe fill that role longer term for you?
It's interesting. Like, having Kenrich off this team would make them worse because he is a floor raiser to the umpteenth degree.
What was that stat tonight you tweeted? He was a plus 16 in the 1 point game.
Yeah, plus 16 or I think it was plus 16 or plus 20.
That's
in a 1 point game.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, insane. He's an absolute floor raiser. I'm kind of torn on the trade thing. Like, and we talked about this a little bit on last night's group podcast, our weekly roundup podcast, but Joe Masato put out a great article about how Kenrich Williams basically said, I want to retire as a Thunder, right? Yeah, like he loves it here. As a small market, you die to get those kind of guys.
Yeah.
And once you get one, are you going to trade them away? Now, Justin brought up a great point last night of, Steven Adams was the same way. You shipped him off.
Yeah.
I think you ultimately have to do what is best for the long-term growth of your franchise. And if somebody meets your asking price for Kenrich, you help him get to a spot that will be beneficial for him and will get him paid. You thank him for his service. I don't think like the Thunder's culture is going to tank when Kenrich leaves.
No.
But another option is you could keep him around and say, hey, Kenny, you're going to play every other night.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we're only going to play.
Muscala was given that last year. They said, exactly, you're probably not going to play the rest of the way. And he said, I'm fine. Keep me.
Yeah. That works. Now, I hear a lot of people talk about, like, well, Kenrich Williams is the kind of guy that you're looking for whenever you are good.
Yeah.
Well, if the Thunder aren't good for 2 to 3 years, Kenrich Williams is 30 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. So at some point, I mean, like, again, this isn't 2K. These guys run out of steam at some point in time.
Yeah.
I think that the Thunder have a cap on all of their players. Like, you meet the asking price, they're yours. Now, I don't think they're broadcasting that out to the league,
sure,
but they know what they want for their guys. And if somebody meets the asking price for Kenrich Williams, I think you pull the trigger, right? And I think Justin talking about Steven Adams last night really bought me into that idea.
Let me ask you this. The Thunder are known for doing players right on the way out. Chris Paul, as an example, the Thunder had offers from Philly and they had offers from Phoenix. And Chris essentially reportedly said, I don't want to be in Philly. I'd much rather be in Phoenix. And they took that offer. Could Philly's offer have been better? Maybe. Do you think Kenrich gets that same level of, not, I don't want to call it respect, because I know he's got respect around the front office and around the locker room.
But are they willing to bend their back?
And maybe not even a bend. Like, if it's a, there's three teams offering, maybe they're just a hair different. Maybe the top offer is an additional second rounder. The bottom offer is, you know, less a second rounder. Like, maybe it's that close. Do you think they give him the option, or do you think if all three are contending teams that Sam Presti genuinely thinks Kenrich will help, and if he genuinely believes all three of these situations Kenrich will thrive in, do you think he even gives him that offer?
It's really tough. I mean, if it's like
this, well, let's say it's Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Phoenix are the three teams.
Yeah, calling. I mean, I think Kenrich would be amenable to any of those three. Sure. But if it's Phoenix, Dallas, and the Kings.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Like, he's going to send them to Phoenix, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And I think this is the inherent disadvantage of the NBA. And we could go down a deep rabbit hole with this. We won't. But this is the inherent disadvantage of the NBA, is the Thunder almost have to do that because they need as great of relationships and as great of a reputation around the league with agencies and agents as possible, where the Lakers can literally tell you to go F yourself and then LeBron James will walk through the door.
Right. Right.
You know, and that inherent disadvantage makes it so much more difficult for teams like the Thunder. But I think that's just part of the culture that Sam Presti has. We've seen it again and again and again. Al Horford wanted to go back to Boston. Chris wanted to play with Devin Booker and be closer to LA to his family.
Mm-hmm.
Russ wanted to play with James Harden.
RIP.
I think they would be amenable to not shipping Kenrich anywhere. Honestly, if I had to guess right now, I think the conversation between Sam Presti, Kenrich Williams, and Kenrich's representation is, we love you. You are great for our team. We want you here long term. If a team comes and offers something of substance,
right,
we're going to have to think about trading you. But we are going to do right by you, and we're not going to trade you to a place where you're not going to have an opportunity, where you're not going to get paid, and where you're going to be in a horrible situation. We're going to make sure those three boxes get checked for you, and you have every advantage.
And it's nothing new. Like, I think his trade value has risen now that he's had a second year of sample size that shows he's a good player, but teams were calling on him last year, albeit it was a second round throw-in pick just to give you something for him. I think his value is much higher now, but the same conversation was probably happening last year, so it's nothing new.
Definitely. Honestly, I kind of think this is going to be interesting. I've always wanted to be a fly on the wall on trade deadline day.
Yeah.
And just kind of see the war room and see what's happening. Because what my imagination tells me is a lot of contending teams are going to want Jerami Grant.
Yeah.
And once the Jerami Grant domino falls, a lot of teams...
Or doesn't fall.
Yeah, a lot of teams are going to say, oh shit, we need a pivot. And in the final hour, they're going to call Sam Presti and say, Kenrich Williams was our backup plan if we didn't get Jeremy Grant. Will you still take our offer? And Presti's going to say,
yeah,
the market's a little higher now, right? The supply is lower. The demand is higher. The way the market works, you got to pay more. And maybe saying a bidding war sounds wrong. It's not like teams are going to be throwing in all kinds of crazy stuff. But I think you can pit a few teams against each other that are desperate to get that final piece to push them over the hump.
And I think kind of saw the same thing last year with George Hill. Like there was the Lowry domino. There was, you know, the Dragic domino, and those didn't fall. So ultimately Philly's like, yo, we're going in. I think there's another piece to it where not only is Oklahoma City going to be able to pin teams against each other for Kenrich, a lot of those teams, regardless if you're going to win it all or not, it's nice to get below the luxury tax or reduce your bill. If you can do so, dump a big salary and get a player like Kenrich that makes next to nothing that also makes you better, like, that is a huge value for a team.
Huge. I totally agree. Bear with me for a second. You just talk about something because I'm going to look up a trade real quick.
Oh, goodness. I'll talk Muscala for a little bit just because he's a guy that I think is a more interesting case. I don't want to get too in-depth on his trade value because ultimately I don't think he will be traded. I think that's one that, similar to Kenrich, unless you get an offer that you cannot refuse, he's going to be here, and I don't think he's going to warrant an offer that Sam Presti can't refuse. He's good. He's great for this team. He's an excellent three-point shooter. I just don't think he warrants like a first-round pick by any means. I think he'd rather stick around, A, if he had the choice, and B, if Presti got offered a second rounder, he wouldn't do it. But I think Muscala is a guy that is being talked about in like these Bleacher Report articles and maybe in the rumor mill, but he's not a guy that's going to be going, I don't think.
Totally agree. Okay, I found it. And as I thought, it works out to a T.
Uh-oh.
Recently, we had a three-team trade, and Boston's motivation in that trade was to cut money, right? Yep. That was the whole goal. A straight-up trade, Aaron Naismith for Kenrich Williams, I think makes Boston a little bit better.
Yeah, certainly.
And it cuts just the amount of salary, $1.7 million, to get them below the tax line.
So it's a win-win.
Just saying.
It's a win-win. He's just been awful this year, but I do like the idea of him being in Oklahoma City.
Yep, 22-year-old kid that's known to have the potential to be a sharpshooter.
Yep.
Two things before we get out of here, Nick. We went a lot longer than I think either of us planned. Two things, because I've been hitting the refresh button like a crackhead trying to get a PlayStation 5 on BestBuy.com. NBA.com/stats has finally updated with tonight's game. So when you look at the last 2 weeks, eight games, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 28 points a game, 5.4 rebounds, 7.3 assists, shooting 48% from the field and 32% from three, taking 8.6 free throw attempts a game.
Where's that rank among guards?
Oh, you're going to have to give me a second to...
I like the numbers. I still wish the three-point numbers were higher. I mean, there's two sides to every story. Shea's three-point shooting has been abysmal, but that also means there's room to get better. Like, imagine if he was shooting 38% from three or 40% from three again. He'd be averaging, you know, 20, 29, 30, 31, 32 a game, you know?
As far as points, Shea, over the last eight games for guards, number one in the league, about half a point ahead of Luka, three quarters of a point ahead of Tatum, close to a full point ahead of DeMar DeRozan. Amongst those guys, he is shooting 6% better than Luka, 5% better than Tatum, 5% better than Trey, a little bit better than Ja, way better than Devin Booker over the last eight. The three-point percentage, besides Trey Young, he's shooting much better from three than those other guys. That's crazy to me. DeMar DeRozan takes 0.6 threes a game.
He's a mid-range king, man.
Yep.
So does Shea win a Western Conference Player of the Week award?
Oh, that's tough.
I think he should.
The stats, Barrett, the one-loss column does not.
Right. And that's every award. And that's Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm. Last thing before we get out of here, after tonight, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets are tied as far as record is concerned. Houston has the tiebreaker. So as of this moment, the Thunder have the third best odds in the NBA draft, and they own the Clippers pick, which is the 11th best odds.
I've got a very weird question I was thinking about last night. You know, like whenever you're getting in bed and your mind's just racing and you're like, why am I thinking about this?
Mm-hmm.
How fun would it be? It would never happen, but I think it'd be good for the league, and I think it'd be good for both these teams. If Oklahoma City and Houston called each other tomorrow and said, let's trade each other's first round pick straight up. listen, at that point, neither team has to worry about tanking anymore. All of a sudden, you can try to win games because you're inherently making your own pick better, because then Oklahoma City winning games makes Houston's pick better and vice versa. Uh-huh. So all of a sudden, you don't have to worry about, it's like the tank race is over. You can win games and not have to worry about it. Like, how fun would that be if you knew Oklahoma City had Houston's pick and they could just screw it, let's go win 10 straight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If that was the case, you trade nobody and you play Kenrich and Mike Muscala 30 minutes.
Yeah, tonight, dude.
You know?
Yeah.
How fun. That's fun. Be? That's funny. I like that. I like that a lot. All right. We went really long for a post-game pod. I'm kind of impressed, actually.
Barely talked about the game too.
Yeah. All right, Nick. Get us out of here.
Alrighty, well, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Uncontested Postgame Podcast. It's a very, very light week this week. Only one more game for Oklahoma City on Friday. They will host the Indiana Pacers. Not sure who's on that postgame. We'll be back with you guys live after that contest. Pacers are bad. Like, that's a team that a month ago would have told you is an easy loss, but with them, I mean, completely tanking out the season, half their guys are temporarily hurt, they're on the trade market for just about anything. That game will be interesting, but like Jacob said, currently tied for the third highest lottery odds. Oklahoma City is well on their way to earning a guy like Paolo, a guy like Jabari, and hopefully not a guy like Chet. Until we talk to you guys on Friday, as always, Thunder up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.